Future Rich. I'm your host, Barbara Ginty, and also a CFP, which is a certified financial planner. And I am here today with one of my expert guests, Leslie Tain. She is a financial attorney with over 20 years experience helping consumer and business owners with their debt management. Leslie, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Barbara, for having me today.
So to give our listeners definitely struggle with debt when it comes to especially student loans, but also some credit card as well. And just to give the statistics, so over 44 million people have student loan debt. It's over $1.5 trillion. And interestingly, two-thirds of the student loan debt is held by women.
Yes, we see a lot of people with student loan debt, and sometimes they don't even realize they're struggling with it. They just have it, and they're not sure what to do with it. So they put it into forbearance or a deferment, or they ignore it, and they don't realize that that really means that they're struggling with it.
Absolutely. And student loan debt is one of the protected classes of debt, correct?
It is, in the sense that there's a couple of things to know about what that means in terms of a protected class of debt, which means that as a general rule, you can't file, you can't discharge student loans in bankruptcy. There is a possibility of doing it, but because it's so slim and the requirements are pretty strict, we generally tell people that it's not something that can be discharged in bankruptcy. It also doesn't carry with it a statute of limitations for the collectability of the account. And what that means is a statute of limitations is a time frame in which an action can be brought without it becoming basically stale or uncollectible. So what that means is in the arena of student loans is that the creditor does not have to file a lawsuit or come after you within a 4, 5, 6, or 7 year period. They really can do that indefinitely.
Yeah, and we've had some listeners on who said that, you know, they didn't realize they had a loan, and then the collector, you know, the student loan eventually finds them. We had one or two people that were ghosting their loans, and that did not work out well.
Yeah, I don't recommend ghosting your loans or your creditors. There are people who do that, and I understand that you think that it's quiet and, oh, good, they're not bothering me. But that just means likely that the loan is in transition from one agency to another or from one division to another, and that just means that they're going to come after you. In terms of federal loans, ghosting would be a huge mistake, because you might think up to 2-3 years you haven't heard from them, and then all of a sudden your tax refund is garnished, your wages are garnished, and they don't have to file a lawsuit to do that. So ghosting would not be my recommended strategy in trying to deal with your student loans at all. And I don't recommend that in general when it comes to debts. You know, I know that it's stressful. I know that it's difficult to face and manage. I was there once also many, many years ago, over 20 years ago when I graduated from law school. I had student loan debt too. So I remember the feeling of like, oh, I have this debt and I'm useless from a credit perspective. And, you know, but ignoring it definitely is not going to help. Understandably, you don't have the funds to pay it. And at the time, I didn't have the funds to pay it either. But there has to be communication between you and the creditor, or seek out somebody like myself, who's really an expert in the area of student loans and can guide you on what you can expect during the process from the type of loans that you have. At least educate yourself so you're in the know.
Absolutely. Yeah, because it's really complicated. So I wasn't even going to take a step back, just so our listener knows. There's a big difference between private and federal loans.
Totally. Huge difference between private and federal loans. And most people don't even realize what they have, because they'll come and they'll say to me, I have a Sallie Mae, I have an Avant, I have a whatever it is loan. And I'll say, yes, that's the servicer. It could be the loan provider, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's government or private. Usually it says on documents that it's the Department of Education. That's a good indication that it's a federal loan. If you're unsure whether your loan is federal or private, call the creditor and ask them, is this a private loan? Is this a federal loan? If you can't read the information online, give them a call and find out. Really, you need to be in the know and understand, you know, who owns your loan. And then once you know who owns the loan, then the strategy changes. So from a federal loan to a private loan, the strategy for resolution completely changes, because
So that means when you have Sallie Mae, that doesn't necessarily mean it's private.
That's correct. That doesn't mean that that's a private loan.
Got it. So you really have to call your company and find out what, because most people have one or two payments but have multiple loans wrapped into that.
Yes, well, that's true. They may have consolidated also at some point. So, and the decision to consolidate also is impacted by what type of loan you have. So absolutely, make the phone call to your creditor and say, I don't understand what kind of loan I have. Can you tell me if it's a private loan or is it a government loan?
Okay. And then the benefit of I mean, with a federal loan, so I think there's probably pros and cons with that. One of the benefits would be they have the different repayment programs, but as you said, they can come after your tax return.
Yeah, your tax refund money. Yep, they sure can.
And they can garnish your wages
Without
all
warning.
without a with a court order or without that.
That's correct. Yep, without a court order, they do not have to file a lawsuit to do either.
Well, now
And they can take Social Security, which is another piece that people don't understand, that as you age, Social Security is a generally exempt item on the list where most creditors can't touch your Social Security. But if you have a delinquent federal student loan, they can garnish your Social Security income.
Wow. And so now that wouldn't happen. What if your parent co-signed your loan? Could that happen to the parent?
It could happen to the parent, assuming it's a federal loan. If it's a private loan, then that's not,
That's different.
then
Okay,
they
so
would
when
have
it's a
to,
federal loan, they could garnish your tax refund, your wages, and also in the future, because it never goes away because of the statute of limitations, they could go after your Social Security. And they could do the same thing if your parent co-signed.
Yes, it doesn't matter who the debtor is. It just matters whether it's a federal loan. Usually, the federal loans, it's the student. The
Okay.
parents are usually signing a either Parent Plus loan or a private loan.
Okay.
But as a general rule, if it's a federal loan, then they can go after if there's cosigners, if there's an individual, they can go after one, not the other. Sometimes in co-signing situations, one person has money and the other doesn't. We often find out when there's parents or grandparents or aunts or uncles who've signed off on loans for students that don't pay, they can absolutely go after whoever signed on that loan.
Oh my gosh. Now with federal, can they put a lien on a home?
So generally, they don't put a lien against a property on the federal student loans because they have a lot more
Easier access.
leverage. Yeah, there for them, it's easier access to the tax refund money, and that could be joint tax refund money too with somebody like your spouse who is not a debtor,
Oh,
not a co-signer,
really?
so they can still take it. Yep.
Oh, wow. And then how does it work with the private?
Private is a totally different ballgame in the sense that, from a private student loan perspective, they offer you less repayment options, but on the back end, there's more options if you need to negotiate a settlement with them versus the federal loans, where settlement is generally not going to be an option. On the private student loans, delinquency and then ultimately some sort of settlement are more likely in those scenarios. So they would have to sue you, get a judgment against you, and then enforce the judgment against you. And that can include, certainly depending on the state that you're in, a lien against real property, a lien against your bank account, garnishment of wages, depending on your state's laws.
Got it. Okay. So they can both really go after you with the private. It's just a little more work on their part to go after you.
Yes, yeah, there's definitely more work on their part for the private student loans, but we find that from a private student loan perspective, the success rate in negotiating settlements is much, much higher. But keep in mind that yes, you can have a great settlement offer, but you have to be able to pay that settlement offer. So, it's all good and well, that the settlement offer is there, but you have to have the funds to do it.
Absolutely. Wow, that's really interesting. And then, so do you have what's the, I would say, like the top five things people should know about their student loans?
One, again, about whether it's a private or public. Two, that if you ignore it, it will not go away. Three, that it's basically non-dischargeable in bankruptcy. Four, that it will impact your credit. So it will keep your credit score down if you don't pay it and you continue to have hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And four, that you should not continue to add to your student loan debt until you've started to pay down some. So even though you're in school and it's technically in deferment, you can make payments. So I'll give you an example. So
Sure.
my children are all in college, and I had them take a federal student loan out. The federal student loan in the first and second years is about $5,500. In the third and fourth year of undergraduate, it's about $7,500. So I had my children take out the loan for a couple of purposes. One, because it was available, and two, because I wanted it to help their credit. So we took the loan out in their name and we started repayments. Repayments are
Wow.
not required on federal student loans until after you graduate, but I want them to pay those. So we've been paying, I set them up to pay $100 a month, And because it's not a required payment, you can't do it automatically. You have to go in and physically make the payment every single month. But what that will do is reduce the balance.
Yep.
So when they graduate, they won't have as much debt. So we want to suppress the amount of debt, the total amount of debt that they'll come out with, and also show on the credit report that the balance is going down and that they're making payments in order to benefit them from a credit perspective. So you can, so number five on my top five tips is that you can make payments to your student loans. And I think that generally you can find $100 a month to make the payment. It's $25 a week. So there's no reason why you can't find some sort of position that pays you money to make that payment during while you're in school. So
No,
I
that's really
understand.
interesting. My sister did the same thing. I said to her, you should be making payments, and she's like, oh, well, they said it's not due for 6 months after I graduate.
Right, it's not due, but that doesn't mean you don't make the payments on it to benefit you.
Right.
Yeah,
Oh,
of course
absolutely.
it's
And
not due, but
her
interest
amount
is
had gone up.
accumulating.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's really smart. And then what about for people who feel like they've graduated college and they have a full-time position? I see this a lot with people, but they feel like they can't make the payments. And there's for those that have federal loans, there's all the different types, right? So income-based repayment, income contingent. And I always go back and forth whether or not it's a good fit for people to do it, because with certain programs, it still could take 20 years to pay it off, and then there could potentially be a tax bill at the end.
Well, it's going to take you, if you go to income-based or income-sensitive repayments or reduced payments or deferments, it's going to take you minimum 20 years and probably 30 years. It's designed like a mortgage. So if you calculate it with the interest, it's about a 30-year payoff. So just in time for your own children to go to
Oh my
college. So
gosh.
if you, right, so if you continue to defer or you make smaller payments, then obviously it's going to take you a longer time to pay it off. But that's understandable under when you're young and you're not making a lot of money. But that doesn't mean that you keep deferring it because you don't feel like paying it. So there's not going to be a discharge of that debt at some point in the future by the good graces of some of the loan companies and the federal government. So don't rely on that fact that you think there's going to be some sort of discharge. It's my recommendation, especially when you're young and you may not have a lot of obligations, that you try your very best to pay down your student loan so that when you get a little older, you can take on other financial obligations like a mortgage, or you can put money away into retirement or other investment vehicles as opposed to using your money to pay down your student loan. So do the best you can, even though you're putting it into income base. Now, I totally get the reality because I help people all the time. So I totally understand that there are just times where you have absolutely no money to pay the student loans. And I get that. And that's why those programs are there and you have to utilize them. And when I first graduated from law school, I had the same thing because I didn't have a job immediately. So how was I going to pay $1,000 a month 20 something years ago when I wasn't even earning any money? So you can only take blood from a stone. But so given that fact, if you can't make the payment, you can't make the payment. Put it into deferment and deal with it later. I often tell young people, and when I define young people, that's people in their 20s, that it's understandable that you don't have any money. It's not expected of you to have money in your 20s. But if you plan correctly and accordingly, you can start chip away. You can chip away at it. You could, I know, listen, I know no one wants to live at home. I get it. But you can find creative ways to live for less and put more money towards paying the debt. And of course, we're not going to cry over spilled milk with, I shouldn't have gone. I hear this too. I shouldn't have gone there. It was a mistake and it was so
Right, yeah, you
expensive,
have to
but
take that path. You can't go back and
forget
change the
that.
past.
Right. If that's only going forward, if you're going to go into a graduate program, you should really learn from that or take a year off. I mean, I have a one of my kids was talking about that, and it's my stepson, and I said to him, maybe take a year off between college and graduate school and really focus on paying down as much as you can so that when you go to graduate school, that you take on less debt. Or that it's not the volume of debt is not there because his choice in his first 2 years was to go to a very expensive school. And then after spending enough time with me, he realized that that didn't make any sense. And he transferred to a state school, to an excellent state school, where he will minimize his the financial impact of those decisions. But going forward, taking a year off or 2 years off between school, even if you're not working in your ideal job, it's not your dream job, but it's an opportunity to pay down some of the debt catch your breath. You know, it's like a recovery period. We do that when we work out. You got to recover.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
take a year or two and recover a little bit, then go into your graduate program, and then go into the graduate program with a lot less on your back and a lot less pressure to get a job when you graduate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you brought up with the point of that it could take a lot longer than the government plans are telling you, I think not going into that blindly and just saying, okay, well, I'm just going to do the income-based repayment and everything's going to go away in 20 years or 25.
Yeah, that's wishful thinking. And in reality, you know, over time, so for me, that happened because I was able to build my career and create an opportunity for myself to pay off my student loans. But if you, and that's ideally what the goal is. The goal is for you to build your career and get to a point financially where you can pay off your student loans and you're not making the payments for 20 to 30 years. And really, ideally, that's probably what will happen. So let's be optimistic about it. You didn't put all that money and create, your education was an investment. The investment costs money. So there's a return on the investment by getting the job after school and then working at that job and putting the time in so that it can grow and your income can grow. And then you can, then there's your investment and you pay it off. So you have to look at it like that. If you look at it like, I'm never paying this off, or I'll just pay it for 20 years and I don't really care, or I have better things to spend my money on and I'd rather travel and do other things, it's understandable. It's just not going to reach your goal to get rid of those student loan debt.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, in certain situations, we've seen people that are going to always have a low income paying job. It's a career choice. So sometimes I feel like it might make sense for them. But generally, as you said, you made an investment into your education to have a career that pays well. So with those folks, I agree. I think they should reevaluate that. I'm just going to do the income based and have it discharged, because that also can come with a tax consequence.
Well, it's not going to be discharged. So understand that. So let me clarify that. Okay. So income based repayment is based on your income. If you get married and you file joint taxes, it's based on you and your spouse's income.
Oh,
so
really?
It doesn't mean it's being, quote, discharged. Discharge means that the creditor is forgiving a portion of that loan. It doesn't mean that at all. It means that you've done income based to lower the payments while you're not earning enough money to pay what they want you to pay. And then as time goes on, you have to continue to send them your tax return. And if you file married filing jointly and your spouse earns substantial income, that number is going to go up. But that doesn't mean that the government or the loan processor is going to discharge your loans after a period of time. The only time that your loan is going to be discharged, meaning less than what you pay, less than what you owe, is in a settlement situation or in a program where your loans, and I'm saying it very slowly for a reason, in a program where your loans qualify for a discharge. And that usually is a 10, 15, or 20-year payment program with very specific requirements where your loan qualifies for it. It is not automatic by any stretch of the imagination.
Got it. Because I hear a lot of times, well, I'm on the income-based repayment program and it'll be forgiven in 20 years. I hear that all the time.
It'll be paid off in 20 years, but forgiven is not the right term. It'll be paid off.
So that's really good. So for our listeners, if you are listening to this and wondering, it's worth double checking on what type of program you're in and what the qualifications are for that program and how exactly it works. So I think a lot of people, we talked about when we first started chatting, is a lot of people kind of put their student loans in a closet and try and forget about it and don't know all the details around it.
That is going to be an ugly door when you open it. You know, I have a bunch of moths flying out at you.
Yeah, I believe it. But yeah, I feel like a lot of people don't realize that. So you have to meet all the qualifications. Because I meet a lot of people that tell me they're on the income-based repayment program, and then they're just making those payments, which are small, because everything will be forgiven in 20 years.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that. That's a misunderstanding of the loan. And I'm going to plug myself for a half a second. I'm going to encourage you, for a small amount of money, which we have, we charge $495, depending on the situation, approximately $495, to learn about your loans. And it is well worth the investment to understand your loans and what you're doing. You cannot stay on income-based repayment forever unless you are on the low-income track forever. If you get married and they're going to want to see your tax returns periodically to review, and if they review that and you have more income, it won't stay where it is.
Yep. Yeah,
And it won't be
and I think
20
your goal, as you
years.
said
It'll
in
be
your
30
career, is
years.
hopefully that you continue to earn more money. And there's exceptions for people that are doing, on a low income track because of a nonprofit or something like that.
Yeah, depending on what their choices are. But you never know what life brings you, in terms of your opportunities career-wise. And again, if you, so that brings up a good point. So let's talk about it. If you are in college or you're in school right now and you're making decisions, if you're going to make the decision to choose a career where the income level is going to be relatively modest, where it's not going to be that high, and you realize that, maximum you're really going to earn is $60,000, $80,000 a year, and you're going to have to rely on a second income at some point. If you choose to go to a school that costs you $70,000 a year, you are not going to pay off those loans. You're just not. And I understand the, because again, I have children in college, so I understand the appeal of different programs in schools and what feels right and doesn't feel right. And I don't like this place or that place or this program or the people who go there. I've heard every excuse you can imagine on why we're not choosing a particular school. But the bottom line is it's a financial investment. And while we want to have a good time at college, we want a particular outcome. And if your outcome realistically is going to be on the, on the lower income side, you have to have a reality check about how to pay back what you're borrowing to go to school and have a good time, because you're
Right, and it's
borrowing
and
money from somebody.
yep, and absolutely, and it's 4 years. You don't want to be paying it for the next 30.
4 years, and if you're lucky, 4 years, because
Right.
these days, unless you jack up those credits and take credits during the summer or winter sessions, you're into the 5-year program. It's not so easy to get out in 4 years.
Absolutely. So I think this is really interesting. So I have another question for you, because I see this too, besides people not understanding whether they have federal or private, or just thinking that now knowing that you can't just discharge the debt just because you're in a program, you really need to understand the qualifications for the program. But I think I have always really been a proponent of paying off your debt, coming up with a strategy for paying it off, as in hopes that your career continues to grow. But I always recommend using a principal payment.
Yes, and
And
that's true too. Even and so you bring up a really good point. Even in the lower income, and let's say you're not paying a lot of money, you can chip away at that student loan, maybe not as much as somebody who's earning twice or three times what you're earning, but you can chip away by making an extra payment towards principal. Principal is the total amount you owed that you owe at any one current time, not the interest that's accumulating on it on a day-to-day basis. And when you do that, you can send a separate check in or a separate payment in and write for principal. And that by reducing the principal, you reduce the total amount of interest that you're paying. So it's an excellent, excellent strategy to pay it off.
They have to allow it, because I was helping my sister with her because she went to law school with her student loans, and the one company said that we weren't allowed to make a principal payment until she made her monthly payment. And the monthly payment was one payment, but it covered I think three or four loans, so we couldn't pay off one of the loans until that monthly payment was made. And then I've had other clients who've said they've called to make a principal payment and were told they're not allowed to.
So from that perspective, I would definitely take a look at the loan paperwork, and not everybody holds on to the loan paperwork. There shouldn't be any prepayment penalty, and so that is technically a prepayment penalty and may be problematic. So if that's the case, you might be in a position to, if those are private student loans, and graduate loans usually are. Private student loans can dictate pretty well what they feel like taking or not taking, but you definitely want to review the paperwork to see if there's any prepayment penalties or anything like that.
Good to know. Yeah. And then I always tell them they should make sure they document the principal payment, because I think a lot of companies, like the big names, when you make the principal payment, if it's not specified, they treat it as an early payment.
Yes. Yep. You want to specify that that's going to principal.
Yeah, because I think we had somebody that was making print or thought they were making principal payments just by adding extra money.
No, yeah, those are pretty. It's still going to chip away, but because interest accumulates, it's a daily interest rate.
Yeah, so similar to a credit card, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, similar to any loan. Any loan has a daily interest rate. Every single day, it costs money.
Which is why we want
That's
you to
why if
pay
you pay
them.
your, right? That's why if you pay your credit cards off in full the day you get the bill, there won't be any interest on it.
Okay. So,
That's why
Leslie,
sometimes
since
you pay it off, you get another bill.
So since you've been doing this, can you tell us like your best case situation that you worked with, or like a worst case, what you've seen?
The best cases are the settlements. So we took a $100,000 student loan and settled it for 35%. And the other day we had one that was a hundred and I'm trying to think, $113,000, and they were willing to settle it at about around $13,000. So it was almost $100,000 savings.
Oh my gosh. And
But
did
they
this
want
person
those.
have to go through bankruptcy, or it was just a pure settlement?
No. These are just pure settlements.
Wow,
No
that's
bankruptcy.
incredible.
Yeah. So sometimes there's lots of opportunities, but understand that only time that opportunity comes up is if you're delinquent on your private student loans. That means you're not making payments, so it's in collections.
Okay, so and that would ding your credit.
For sure it
For
will. Yeah,
sure.
it'll ding it because you're behind, but once you resolve it and settle it'll actually improve your credit score. But there's a caveat on anything that you settle over $600, meaning there's a forgiveness of debt of over $600, you will receive something called a 1099-C forgiveness of debt from the IRS, and the state has a separate tax form, and that means that it's potentially has to be counted as income, and then you're going to have to pay taxes on it. But again, when you calculate what the taxes are going to be, especially when you're younger in a lower tax bracket because you don't earn that much money, if you calculate what the taxes are, it's still a such a substantial savings that it's worth it.
Got it. And but this is just private, right?
Only on private student loans, yeah.
But that's a great option to know that you could settle it and not have to declare bankruptcy. But as we talked about, that's not usually the case with student loans. You can't just be
Yeah,
bankrupt. You
it's
can
not an
do,
option anyway.
yeah.
And I don't recommend telling your creditor that you're going to go file bankruptcy because that's just a waste of breath.
Then what about, so those are great savings. Have you seen a worst case scenario where someone let this get really out of control?
Well, I have seen clients come to me who are in their 70s having their Social Security garnished. That's never a good thing.
No, really?
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do about it. There's just nothing you can do about it. It's just going to continue. And so I have seen that. I've seen on the federal loans a loss of documents where the loan servicer lost documents and refused to acknowledge payments made of in the amount of about $25,000. So that was really probably the most messed up scenario I've ever seen in a student loan situation. I have seen people who are have signed for student loans for grandchildren or relatives that disappear and say, F you, I'm not paying those loans, or for relative people that they don't even have anything to do with anymore, boyfriends of or girlfriends of whomever or whatever, and those people disappear. They have no relationship with them. I had a guy come to me actually, who had a co-signer, and even though we can resolve the account for him, he didn't want the co-signer to be impacted, but the co-signer would be impacted by whatever we did. So he was a little annoyed that I couldn't offer him any other options, but you know, that I can't control the decision making on your end, you know, as far as whether you want that cosigner to be impacted or not. But note that whatever you do to those loans will impact your cosigner.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people forget about that. The reason that you have a co-signer is because they didn't want to give you the loan by yourself. So that person is equally as important on that loan, if not more important.
Well, what it does is it makes you accountable to not just the loan servicer, but to another person. So most people don't want to screw over the cosigner. I have seen situations where people don't care about their cosigner, and they're just going to go ahead and do it. Usually, the cosigner is somebody in a better financial situation, so that person certainly doesn't want to be impacted financially by your decisions.
Absolutely.
But
And you can
go
usually
ahead.
can if you you can there are ways to remove the cosigner, but you have to be proactive about that.
Yeah, sometimes there are. And I encourage you to, when you're taking loans and there's a cosigner, I would encourage you to find the loans where they allow the cosigner to be removed after certain number of successful payments are made. And I definitely, if you don't know whether that's an option in your student loan, I definitely would call the loan servicer and say, is there an option to remove the cosigner? I have made been making payments for 2, 3, 4, 5 years successfully every single month. Can we remove the cosigner?
Yeah, because a lot of people have parents or grandparents or aunts and uncles that help them with get the loan, so they're co-signed.
Totally.
Absolutely. This has been really insightful. I think the biggest thing that I take away from this, Leslie, is I hear so many people tell me that they're on the, I mean, I feel like I hear it at least once a month that I'm on the income-based repayment program, so it's going to be forgiven. So I'm not worried about that part of my finance.
Well, I love that. I love the confidence, so that's great.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful, but I think there may be a slight misunderstanding about, or maybe misusing the term forgiven. Forgiven is like a term of art in the IRS, in the tax world. So it's a possibility that that person's just misusing the term from forgiven to paid off. And please understand that just because you're an income base today doesn't mean that that income base is going to stay the same for 5, 10, 15 years from now.
Right, a lot can change in 20 years. It's a long time, even 15.
Totally. Don't think that just because you gave them an income at 22 years old, that when you're 42, that they're still okay with you paying them $50 a month.
Yeah, because when I do, when we have people on and we go over and they're like, oh, well, I only have to do $100 on my loans, it always concerns me when I hear the balances.
Well, that's true. You know, again, it's true. You only have to pay
Yeah.
$100 a month, but that doesn't mean that's in your best interest. So again, it's sort of financial planning. What is your overall goal? What's the ability to achieve that goal, and what's realistic, and how quickly do you want to get there? So, you know, I have clients in the debt business that want to get where they want quickly, but they don't want, or they don't have the means to get to that place as quickly as they'd like to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the really interesting thing about debt is it's very easy to accumulate it. It
Totally.
happens really, really quickly. Like you can take out easily $200,000 to go to college in 4 years, but it could take 20 to 30 years to pay that off. It's a
Yes,
lot
that's true.
harder to get rid of your debt.
It is. It's so very easy to get in it, and once you're in it, it's like quick. It's like
Quicksand.
cement. It's gonna right. It's just gonna be so stuck in it, and gonna have a hard time walking through it. But it's easy to just kind of get to there. You know, we're having this conversation, but the reality is that anybody who has children who are in middle school or high school, or if you're listening to this and you're being proactive about your student loan situation, or you're trying to strategize how to pay for school, my recommendation is that you have a realistic conversation about money. And even though the kids never want to talk about money, first of all, they don't understand it. And second of all, they don't want to really talk about it because they don't feel like it's their problem. It's something to really think about, because the reality is that it's a decision that's going to be with you for a very long time. So also keep in mind that if you don't finish school, you're still obligated to pay the debt. So if your cosigner, if you pass away and your parent is the cosigner, your parent still has to pay your debt off even though you passed away. So I've seen that too. So understand that that obligation doesn't die with you if you have a cosigner. If you pass away, and it's in solely in your name, then the debt dies with you. It doesn't then attach to your heirs or your family members. But you know, the obligation is still going to be there. So think about it. Is this really the program that you want?
And
Is it
also
cost effective?
the reverse of that, because so if your parent cosign and your parent dies, that can have ramifications.
Just that you're still responsible 100% for the debt. If your parent passes away, that's the end of the debt. But it still means that the cosigner, if you're the cosigner, you're still responsible for it.
Yep, that's really interesting. We had a case where I believe it was a private loan. Because the cosigner died, the loan was due in full.
That it became that they called it in.
Yep, they called it in. Even though the daughter had been making on-time payments, they wanted it paid in full because the cosigner passed away.
So that sounds like a private student loan, and again, you'd have to refer back to the loan documents to see what the rights of the creditor are. And I'm telling you that it would be my recommendation to always hold on to your loan documents, because if that isn't accurate and they call that loan in, you could turn around and either report them to the Department of Finance, Department of Banking. And you may even have an actionable claim against them for doing such a thing. So I would, but you won't have anything if you don't keep the paperwork.
Yeah, and I think that's something I always tell, you know, our listeners and my clients is it's so important that you keep your own documentation and don't rely on the counterparty.
Totally. Do not rely on the creditor to keep all of your paperwork. You have to be organized.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. Well, Leslie, any other tips for our listeners? This has been really insightful.
One thing that we really didn't talk a lot about is a Parent PLUS loan.
Sure.
Parent PLUS loans are really common loans, because the student cannot get loans in undergraduate because they don't have any income, they don't have any history. But so they usually they either need a cosigner or they or the parent takes out what's called the Parent Plus loan. I am not a fan of Parent Plus loans because they're very expensive and they will completely follow you forever. So my recommendation is on a Parent Plus loan that you shop the loan. You know what the fees are. You know what the interest rates are. You know what the payoff, your rights are to pay it off. And I'm also a fan of, from a parent perspective, that I would recommend a co-signing situation versus you taking the loan solely in your name so that there's some accountability on the part of your student and that you have a clear communication and agreement with the student as to who's paying this off, when, and how. Because the other day I had clients come in and these poor people, I really felt badly for them. They came in with their child, who's not a child, who's a young adult, and that young adult went to a very expensive school, and they took out the loans. They do not have the ability to pay back these loans, and that child is a very arrogant young person and is now working in a medical office part-time because they're looking for a second career. And that none of the loans are being paid, and neither of the parents who are nearing retirement have the ability to pay what these loans are required to be paid. So there were definitely a lot of issues with that family. So I could tell you that it's definitely something that you need to discuss with your student as to who's going to be responsible for the loan, how is it going to be paid, and you, as the parent, if you're in your 50s and you want to retire, and you're going to consider retirement income, is that retirement that retirement income is going to have to cover the cost of those loans. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's great. And I agree with you. And if you don't have parents that are going to be helping you at the, you know, because everyone has different life situations, then it's really on you to run the numbers. Like, as we've talked about, you have to be keep your own paperwork. You need to be accountable for this. And you need to understand the type of debt you're taking on.
Totally, you do. You definitely need to be aware of it. And you have to be, and it's very hard when you're younger to be thrust into a loan management situation where, because you're coming right out of high school, you've never managed anything financially. So it's very hard to do that. But if you just keep it in a file and, you know, just hold on to it. And then at some point you come to somebody like me who can sift through all the paperwork and kind of, you know, break it down to really easy, understandable language and give you a clear-cut plan, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for our listeners, we're going to link all of the information in our Instagram and on our website so that you can easily find Leslie. So if you feel like you are overwhelmed with your debt and you need some help, I would highly recommend you reach out to her and get it squared away, because as a financial planner, every aspect of your financial life is important, and especially taking care of your debt is important so that you can get to where you want to go in your financial future. And for our other listeners who'd like to check out our classes, you can find them at www.planancial.com.